Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sari Gaur Bhakta Vrindaki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shama Kundradha Kunigiri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Tham Ki Jai Navadip Tham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Ki Jai Ganga Mai Ki Jai Yamuna Mai Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Brindaki Jai. All glories to the assembled world. All glories to the assembled world. All glories to the assembled world. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam 8633. Tatas. Is that what's written there? No. Yes.
38.
Okay. So this we're starting with 33. Tatas te mandara girim odhaso patyadur madha nadanta udatim ninyu shakta parikha bahavaha. Thereafter, with great strength, the demons and demigods, who are all very powerful and who have long, stout arms, uprooted Mandara Mountain. Crying very loudly, they brought it toward the ocean of milk. Durabharodvaha Shanta Shatravairochanadaya Aparayantas tambodhum vivasha divasha dijahupati. Because of conveying the great mountain for a long distance, King Indra, Maharaj Bali, and the other demigods and demons became fatigued. Being unable to carry the mountain, they left it on the way. Nipatan sagiristatra pohun amaratanavan churnayam asamahata parina kanakachalaha. The mountain known as Mandara, which was extremely heavy, being made of gold, fell and smashed many demigods and demons. Purport. By constitution, gold is heavier than stone. Since Mandara Mountain was made of gold and was therefore heavier than stone, the demigods and demons could not properly carry it to the ocean of milk. Tamstata Pagna Manaso Pagna Bahu Rukantaran Vidyaya Bhagavan Tatra Bhuva Guruha Tatraha. The demigods and demons were frustrated and disheartened, and their arms, thighs, and shoulders were broken. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who knows everything, appeared there on the back of his carrier, Garuda. Giripata Vinishtishtan Vilokya Madatanavan Ikshaya Divayamasa Nirjaran Nirvranam Yata. Observing that most of the demons and the demigods had been crushed by the falling of the mountain, the Lord glanced over them and brought them back to life. Thus they became free from grief, and they even had no bruises on their bodies. Girim,
Girim,
Charopya,
Charopya,
Prude,
Prude,
Astenaikena,
Astenaikena,
Vidaya,
Vidaya,
Arugya,
Arugya,
Kayaya,
Kayaya,
Abhitim,
Abhitim,
Sura, Sura,
Sura, Sura,
Manair,
Manair,
Pritaha,
Pritaha,
Girim, Charopya Garude,
Girim Charopya Garude,
Astenaikena Lilaya,
Astenaikena Lilaya,
Arugya Prayaya Bhaktim,
Arugya Prayaya Bhaktim,
Sura Sura Ganair Vritaha,
Sura Sura Ganair Vritaha,
Girim Charopya Garude,
Girim Charopya Garude,
Arugya Prayaya Bhaktim,
Arugya Prayaya Bhaktim,
Sura Sura Ganair Vritaha,
Sura Sura Ganair Vritaha, Girim Charopya Garude, Astenaikena Lilaya, demons. Purport. Here,
is proof of the omnipotence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is above everyone. There are two classes of living entities, the demons and the demigods, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is above them both. Demons believe in the chance theory of creation, whereas the demigods believe in creation by the hand of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The omnipotence of the Supreme Lord is proved here, for simply with one hand he lifted Mandara Mountain, the demigods, and the demons, placed them on the back of Garuda, and brought them to the ocean of milk. Now, the demigods, the devotees, would immediately accept this incident, knowing that the Lord can lift anything, however heavy it might be. But although demons were also carried along with the demigods, demons, upon hearing of this incident, would say that it is mythological. But if God is all-powerful, why would it be difficult for him to lift a mountain? Since he is floating innumerable planets with many hundreds and thousands of Mandara mountains, why can't he lift one of them with his hand? This is not mythology, but the difference between the believers and the faithless is that the devotees accept the incidents mentioned in the Vedic literatures to be true, whereas the demons simply argue and label all these historical incidents mythology. Demons would prefer to explain that everything happening in the cosmic manifestation takes place by chance, but demigods or devotees never consider anything to be chance. Rather, they know that everything is an arrangement of the Supreme Personality of God. That is the difference between the demigods and the demons.
Om Jamati Nirantasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Miditam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Tadhati Shapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Chutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Shahagana Laganatam Vitam Tam Sadivam Sadvaitam Sabhatutam Pradijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Shahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindho, Dina Bandho Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute, Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Prishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hori Priye, Vancha kolpita bhutyascha kripa sindho bhyevacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda
Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasani Gaurabhaktavinda
Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Girin Charokya Garude Hastenai Kena Lidaya Arushya Prayayava Abtim
Sura Sura Ganaya Krita.
Vishnu Bhakta Smita Daiva Asuras Tadvi Pariya. The devas, demigods, are all Vishnu Bhaktas, devotees of the Lord, and the asuras, the demons, are just the opposite. So the asatyama pratishtam te jagadahu nisham aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kama hoitukam. They say the world's all false. There's no basis to anything. Everything's has its matter is eternal. Matter is ever existing. If you think spirits matter ever existing, we think matter is eternal. No creation of matter required. Apratishtha, there's no higher truth or underlying truth. Certainly there's no God, Jagadat or Panisha. There's no controller, there's no God, that's all for babies and children. No controller. That's a figment of your imagination. Aparastra Sampritya. The atoms and molecules are existing and they have their own properties and they become attracted and they combine in different ways and they evolve and that explains. That's enough to explain everything. We may not be able to explain everything, but whatever we follow a scientific method, whatever we can't explain today, we'll be able to explain tomorrow. And you guys are just sit here on funny myths. You have your creation stories, which are all unscientific. So we have a little pity for you, poor unenlightened folks. This is their demons. Because they don't like the idea that there should be a supreme control. The expression is, while the cat's away, the mice will play. So the scientific mice want to play, and therefore they don't like the idea that there's a cat. Or there's a Bengali proverb, what is that? Shakuni Shat Guru Mani. The vulture is cursing the cow to die. There's a vulture, he's circling around and for days he hasn't eaten and he sees a cow below, so he's cursing the cow, die. But does it mean that the cow has to die because the vulture is cursing? But this is the mentality of the vulture. So the scientists are cursing, there's no God, God is dead. But God is not obliged to conform to their scientific method or scientific conclusions, which are not actually scientific. They pull over and try to monopolize the right to explain everything. But they can't do it directly. Prabhupada mentions here the idea of chance, that everything happens by chance. And this is a bhakta-bhava. Our mathematician friend, the late Sadapuda Prabhu, explained to me that chance doesn't cause anything. You know, we hear that life came about
of chance. And popularly people think that chance causes things to happen, just the laws of chance. And why did this happen? Well, the laws of chance. It was inevitable. But as Sariputta Prabhu explained, chance doesn't make anything happen. It's a statistical description of how things have happened. But it's not a cause for the occurrence of anything. I can give you an example. Suppose you look on Google and you find that there's an 85% chance of rain today. And then it rains. Now, why did it rain? Do you think that it rained because there was an 85% chance that it would rain? That the statistical observation that there was an 85% chance would make it rain? That to conform with Google's algorithms or something, it had to rain? Chance doesn't make it rain. If you look in the background, there's cold fronts, there's warm fronts, they interact in different ways, there's all sorts of things that go into making rain take place. But the laws of chance don't make a drop fall from the sky. Or another example, in America, in West American Europe especially, there's probably about in Bombay, there's a 50% chance that any married couple will get divorced. Yeah, that's the rough statistic. But in how many instances would you say, it's really sad that this couple got divorced, but they had to get divorced because there was a 50% chance that they would. The statistics were running low, you know, it was only like around 47 or 45, so to fulfill the statistical norm, this couple had to get divorced. You know, it didn't have anything to do with he was a drunkard, she's a witch, any of that. It was just the laws of chance that made it happen. Now, if you're looking for mythology, there's a mythological beast for you. The laws of chance would make everything happen. Not so. And, in fact, they can't explain why everything happens. They're good at explaining some things. They can observe material nature working in different ways and talk about what they see and make accurate observations. But what's beyond their scope, they can't tell you the authority. Even they will sometimes say that metaphysical issues are beyond the realm of science. We can't talk about this because it's beyond the realm of science. Good. Then, be quiet. Talk about what you know, how things work within your empiric jurisdiction, and leave metaphysics to the metaphysicians. Or, if you want to at least go with a little logic, then probably gives different logical things. And there are many logical arguments for the existence of the supreme control. Everything that works, that's sophisticated, has some controller behind it. This microphone is not just a chance assemblage of metal and wires and other components, remarkably amplifying my voice. There's intelligence and a plan behind it. That means a person. This room didn't assemble itself. It's not that the wood and the stone and whatever else there might be decided, wouldn't it be good if we were a temple? You're building a temple now. The temple will go up because of the people behind it. Even practically speaking, there's one person behind it, Bhakti Vikas Maharaj, and he engages other persons, and they engage other persons, contractors and workers. And so the temple will come up. That's reasonable. A person with intelligence has a desire and organizes things, and get a temple. But if you wait for the stones and the bricks and the marble and the other elements to assemble themselves, you'll have a mighty long wait. You'll have an infinite wait. So things happen because of personal control, personal intelligence. Sadaputta Prabhu gives an argument for something called information theory, in which, mathematically speaking, at the start of a process, whatever it is, you have boundary conditions and you have some information. So your boundary conditions might be for the temple that the ground is like this, the weather is like that, so many conditions, stone is available here, wood is available there, other elements are available. We have, you know, various resources, they're all there. And then there's information. You have to have plans. You have to say, okay, this is going to look like that. You draw a model, and you work out the particulars. We have to put bolts here. We have to put plinth here. We have to put this here. We have to put that there. You work out detailed plans. And then with the resources and the plans, the temple can go up. If you don't have the resources, it can't happen. And if you don't have the information, the plans, it can't happen. And your information has to be sophisticated, otherwise you won't get a sophisticated result. You just say, well, pile up the bricks over here, and pile up and put a window over there. You'll get, you know, something quite rough at best. But if your plans are exact, so many feet, so many inches, or so many meters, and so many this, and so many that, four screws here and a window of this specification there, then you'll get something quite sophisticated. So the scientists of the reductionistic school, those who would like to say it all started from the greatest simplicity and evolved to the greatest complexity, face a problem. They want to start with the simplest of ingredients, of course. Because if you start with complex ingredients, how do they get there? They have to evolve from something. So you have to start with simple, simple ingredients. Sometimes we hear about, what is it, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, and hydrogen, the building blocks of the nitrogen, the building blocks of life. Who here was taught about the building blocks of life? Come on. How many were taught about the building blocks of life? Okay. Yeah, when we went to school in science, the building blocks of life, these four chemicals, without them, you can't get it. Okay, so you start with these very simple things. Or if you're really going to go down lower, you have to say we start with atoms. But for simplicity or complexity, we'll start with these simple molecules. Okay, so those are your resources. And now you've got to also have simple, simple laws of nature. Right? Your information has to be simple because we want simplicity. If there are complex laws, they must have evolved. So we have to have simplicity. And no real plan, just everything evolves from this simple, these simple laws and simple resources. But you have a problem there. The information content of your resources and your plan or laws are very, very simple. You could write them on, you know, a sheet of paper. You could say, okay, it's this many bits of information, and it's not many. But to describe the universe, or even this planet, you need, you know, more bits of information than Google even could handle, with all of its data centers and so on. Huge amount of information to describe, you know, the Godavari River, for example. You need pages and pages and pages and pages and pages. And, you know, the earth is full of rivers and mountains and all the plants and animals and all the sophisticated stuff. Even Sariputta Prabhu wrote a scientific paper, co-authored a scientific paper, mathematically describing a very simple creature, the E. coli microorganism, the typical subject matter for scientific discussion, because it's so simple. And showed that the amount of information content, if you have to take everything you knew about this bacterium and put it into information in the most compressed fashion, it would be huge. And that's one crummy little bacteria. So you have tremendous information in the world as it exists. And scientists want to start with absolutely minimal information in the beginning. Problem is that in any closed system, what you get at the end in terms of information content cannot exceed what you start with. You know, if you had 10 boxes of information at the beginning, you have to have 10 boxes of information at the end, 10 pages at the beginning, 10 pages at the end. You can't start with 10 and wind up with 10,000. Then that's mathematically demonstrable. And yet here we have it, this, you know, millions of pages of information which supposedly come from, you know, not more than you could write on a page. It doesn't work that way. So they're pretending or supposing or pronouncing that everything comes from very simple elements, it all evolves, and it's happens largely by chance. They're not explaining anything. Or they're covering what they can't explain. They're showcasing what they do know and pretending to know much more. Because finally, they want to get rid of the necessity of the Supreme Controller. That is their goal, satyam pratishtam te jagadaru anisham, because asuras sarvi pari, they're against Krishna bahir mukti. They're against the personality of Godhead. They've turned their faces away from the personality of Godhead. That's why they've come to the material world. And because of a lack of sukriti, because they're too sukriti-namutai, nirāgana, māyā, prithikana, asurapama, āśrita, they're obstinately opposed to anything that suggests the existence of God. But a theist, the devotees, will say that it requires intelligence behind anything sophisticated, certainly a universe, certainly millions of universes. It requires intelligence. Even your stuff needs a source. Even your carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, whatever it was. See, I forgot what my building blocks were. Carbon, oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen. They have to start somewhere. Do you think they just eternally exist? Behold, the eternally existing oxygen atom. Oxygen molecule. They need a source. Your laws of nature don't automatically exist. Even let's take the laws of Tamil Nadu. Why do they exist? They exist because someone decided we require these laws. And they exist because they're enforced. Suppose there's a law against whatever it is. That law is only good because someone enforces it. If you didn't have law enforcement, your laws would be meaningless. No one would care for it. Right? So law doesn't mean just there's a law. Law needs enforcement. And these laws of nature have to be enforced throughout the universe. Why? And your evolution, matter evolves into more complex matter evolves into life, life evolves into more complex forms of life, more forms, complex forms finally evolve into Homo sapiens. For that story to take place, you need, they say, millions and millions and billions of years. That means you need time. Even to boil a pot of water, you need time. If you put your pot on the stove with water in it and a fire under it, what happens? Nothing happens unless you have time. In 5 minutes, your water will boil. In 0 minutes, nothing. So you need time. And where does time come from? Mr. Scientist, where does time come from? It's such a powerful thing, time. Nothing can happen without it. Where does it come from? I think it just popped into existence by laws of chance which couldn't have existed without time. Why is there time? And they give you this stuff, well, our universe is just one out of millions and billions of possibilities. Ours happens to be the one in which there's a sun here and a moon there and this here and that here. Okay, our universe just happens to be the one in which there's time, but where did it come from? So you have, we have the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's eternal and all-powerful. And you have these mysterious elements and laws and time, which somehow or other just exist. Avidya, the Bhagavatam says that the origin of everything is consciousness. There is an origin of everything. One has to inquire at least, what is the origin of everything? And scientists are doing that. What is the origin of everything? They're digging deeper and deeper and they're getting into universes and galaxies and black holes and this element and that element and genes and so on. Finally, the question, the base question is, where does everything come from? That's what we really want to know. And then the question will be, all right, if there's a source of everything, is that source conscious or not conscious? Is it more like the table or more like the vegetable? Their theory is it's more like the table. It has no consciousness, it has no will, it has no cognizance of anything. Certainly has no feelings. It just exists. And Tathagata has thoughts, feelings, intentions. So he could write a book. Do you think the table could get together with a notebook and a pen and write something? And why should it? What would be the motive? No, it just happens by chance, but chance doesn't make anything happen. So finally, behind everything is a source who's conscious. And consciousness means person. If you have just homogeneous, undistributed consciousness, that's practically nothing. It's what's the word? Incoherent. It doesn't mean anything. And our experience is not like that. We don't find, like blobs sort of consciousness that spread out like water without any. We find people or mosquitoes, and mosquitoes are conscious. Therefore, they have intentions, as we well know. They have desires. They have a certain amount of intelligence. They know, go for the ankles, go for the wrists. So even your mosquito makes things happen. But this table or this building don't make anything happen. They just sit there. They sit there for a long time and finally they'll deteriorate and fall apart, but they won't make anything happen. So when we come to the source of the universe and all the living beings, we have a choice of having a creative person who's more intelligent than all the other persons, who's unlimitedly intelligent, and who has unlimited power. That's intelligible. I have some power, you have more power, he has still more. You come to the person who's got maximum power. So with intelligence, so with everything else. But finally you come to the supreme person. Or you have these simple little building blocks of life, simple laws of nature, and other such simple information about conditions, resources, that somehow they become this marvelously complex universe. So the Bhagavatam, without having to ponder the questions like, wow, is it this? Just comes out and tells us. A big yasra. He's independent, he's fully conscious, he's the source of everything. So we don't have to speculate. We don't have to debate the question. We take the information from Shastra, business fashion. And who will take it? What is that? Nirmatsaranam Sita. The persons who are interested in the absolute truth, and who are near Matsuri, not envious. Not envious. At the heart of the demonic mentality is envy. Why should I be under someone? Why should I be controlled by anyone else? Why should I have to listen to someone else? What about me? I have power. I want to enjoy. I'm perfect in some ways. I'm strong. I can be happy on my own. I have my relatives, I have my friends. Who else is there like me? I'm a unique individual. They're all Paurusha. It's all about their own power. And they detest the idea that they should be under control. Although they are. Mrityu sarva-varaschana. You don't accept Krishna, you have to accept death. There is an absolute authority. An all-powerful, all-pervading absolute authority. Who will kill you? Who or which? Take your choice. But you shall be killed by an all-powerful, all-pervading entity called time or death. And we hate it. Nirmatsura. Matsura means envious, so they're envious of God. In John Milton's poem, Paradise Lost, there's a line, better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. This is the demonic mentality. Even we see in human society, if there's some people at the top, the people who are below want to drag them down. Why should they be above us? Prabhupada gave a lecture in Sweden to some students, and he was sitting on the stage on a chair in asana, and there. Why are you sitting on a big chair? Why are you higher than us? They resented it. So you take that and they can't control their mind, they can't control their senses, they don't know anything about anything. But why should you be above us? Like kids who think, you know, what do my parents know? Very common attitude in the West, and I suppose coming into India more. What do they know? They're old. What do they know? Yeah. We're young. We have new ideas. We're not limited by the old ways of thinking. And young people think like that. Why should we be under them? So finally, it comes to this point, why should we be under God? But we are. And if you don't like it, too bad. Because there's nothing you can do about it. Jata Svihi, Guru, for one who's born, the laws of chance say that death is 100% certain. So as Prabhupada points out, there's, you'll be forced to bow down. There's two ways of bowing down before Krishna. One is voluntarily offer your dandavas, and the other is be killed, and then they'll stretch you out on a table in a morgue. Either way, you'll have to bow down. Why not voluntarily? Well, this is the difference between the devotees and the demons. Hare Krishna. Any questions?
Maharaj, we were speaking about science.
Mm-hmm.
So Srila Prabhupada used to present Krishna consciousness.
He used to present Krishna consciousness as scientific.
Mm.
And he used to speak about the science of God.
Mm.
So in what way is it?
In what way is Krishna consciousness scientific? Prabhupada uses that word, scientific. It's an interesting question. He certainly didn't mean that that it was an empiric process for arriving at a truth that you otherwise wouldn't know, the so-called scientific method. It's a different, as Prabhupada said, it's a different science. And our science, this is science also. You ask your father, what's this? And the father says, that's a book. Now you have knowledge. It's a different kind of science. The science of hearing from one who knows, which is really, I mean, who's done all the scientific experiments that you read about in your biology class or chemistry class? Nobody. Nobody's done all of those things. Somebody's done one, someone's done another, and you read a book and sit in the classroom and they say, this has been shown, this has been demonstrated, this is that. And you accept it. You don't say, well, wait a second, I don't accept anything. On authority. Can you prove that to me? We want to see this demonstrated by the experimental method right here and now. Can you do that? No. So really their method also involves hearing from an authority and submissively accepting some kind of knowledge. Oh, the Vedic science starts there. It involves hearing from an enlightened source. Then you test, you see the practical result. Pratyakshavagamam karmyam susukam kartamavi. You chant Hare Krishna, your consciousness becomes purified, you feel happy, you realize so many things that about who you are and what your life is for. You get freed from shoshuti, sorcham, from anchoring to meditation. You become joyful. So many things are realized in one after another. That's a different kind of thing. That okay? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, scientists say this is laws of chance. How does that work together? Isn't it?
How do the laws of chance go together? I don't really know. From what little science is not my field, by the way, I'm just sort of relaying what I heard from Sadhguru mainly. Usually, as far as I understand it, to talk about regularities rather than laws. Regularity means, you can predict things because it happens and it happens again and it happens again. But it's a law. Yeah, they do speak of laws of motion, laws of this, laws of that. They imply that things always happen that way. Not, but exactly how the law comes into being or is enforced, I don't know that much is said about that.
Isn't it self-defeating for scientists to mention?
I think you have to click it on, it doesn't go. Maybe it doesn't go anyway. Yeah, speak.
Isn't it self-defeating for the scientists to say the laws of chance
is it self-defeating for them to speak of the laws of chance? It's not self-defeating, it's only defeating when you look into it. Like any good bluff. You know, I say, well, you have to listen to me because I've got, you know, who was that? That Brahmin that was with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went into ecstasy and fainted while traveling. He was with a Bengali devotee and a Rajput devotee and some other one or two like that. And some Patan soldiers happened to show up. And they saw that here's this sadhu, and he appears to have been poisoned or something, because he's, you know, unconscious, knocked out. And there are these people surrounding him, so they must be the ones who poisoned him, and they've taken whatever he's got. And they, you know, so they came with their commanding presence, and they were like, saying, we'll arrest you, and so on. And the Bengali devotee, he's like, trembling. But the Rajput devotee said, I've got so many battalions of soldiers surrounding us, waiting for my command. Oh, we better be careful now. Of course, it was a bluff. It wasn't self-defeating, it actually worked. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu woke up, came to consciousness. He said, oh, these are my assistants, and they have a kind of epilepsy, which inspired one scholar who wrote a commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita to explain that Chaitanya was apparently an epileptic. My prediction. So they speak these high-sounding words. And, you know, I don't know what that five-syllable word is, and wow, we used seven of them in a row. I don't really know what that all means. And he referred to this theorem and that, this and that, and he told me that everything happens by chance. And it's scientific. So why am I believing in this mythology then? And it requires either scientific knowledge or common sense to see that they're bluffing. You have to scratch down and say, oh, you know, like a kid, you know, where did this come from? Well, it came from this. Well, where did that come from? Well, it came from this. Well, where did that come from? Why this? Well, because of that. Well, why that? Well, because of this. Well, why that? My mother used to answer finally, because Y is a crooked letter. But that's what you have to do. You have to say, okay, well, I may not be the most highly educated person. I may be real simple person, but what I want to know is where did all this very simple stuff come from? And where did all these laws come from that made it evolve? And where did time come from? Yeah. And I know you've got it all together for everything after that, but you know, let's get down to the real case at hand here. Where does everything come from? And they've got theories, of course, but they're not on firm ground. Okay.
Now, my question is that the scientific version or religious version, actually the question is where we put a faith in.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are so many people who don't believe in it, like the scientific theories. But then sometimes it's very difficult for those who aspire, especially for Vedic explanation and some this description of Shastras, like in Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, some things which are just beyond imagination or, you know, what is their, you know, actual experience, you know, like seeing Mount Meru. And then also it is said that the doubt is a sign of intelligence. So where is this, how to help to people not to doubt too much or to cut their doubt? You know,
doubt is a sign of intelligence. How to help people to deal with their doubts, especially when they have to consider things that are beyond their experience, mountains made of gold and so on. First thing is they have to admit that not everything is within their experience. When we were traveling here in South India on Padayatra, we had these big Saurashtrian bulls, about twice the height of your South Indian cows and bulls, and with big horns. Those, you may have seen these bulls at Mayapur. There were some, now I think they're in Vrindavan. Big horns. So we'd be traveling through the villages, and we'd see the farmers would come up to these bulls, and they'd be looking at them, and then they'd like touch the horns. are these real? Because it was beyond their experience. There's a story that there were two farmers at a fair in the middle of America, and at this fair there was a camel. And two farmers were looking at it and looking at it and looking at it and looking at it. Finally one turns to the other and says, "There ain't no such animal." So it's not that everything is within our experience. Even Brahma found that not everything was within his scope of empiric investigation. He could travel for thousands of years and not get to the bottom of it. So that's the first thing. Why are we so proud of our senses? You can't even see your eyelid, which is the closest thing to your eye. If I put a piece of paper in front of your face, you can't see anything past it. There are things that dogs hear that you can't hear. Oh, our senses are limited. And our minds are imperfect. We don't infallibly get it right. We're really very, very small. And everyone will, even the scientists, they use this formula. We used to think, but now we know. That means they admit that they were in ignorance. But now we know. Ravindra Sarup Prabhu, my godbrother, he said they should say, "We used to know, but now we think." So we should have some, if we have doubt, we should have some doubt about the comprehensiveness and infallibility of our knowledge. We should have some doubt about the limits of our intelligence, our intellects, and our senses.
That's the first time we should have some healthy doubt about these scientific theories that say that everything comes from nothing. That's a good use of doubt. The next thing is, how do these people get free from doubt? That's a different process, actually. Of course, we have books, we have so much information. But who will accept this? Sukritinam. Those who are fortunate. Those who are fortunate. Those who are duskriti, whose only fortune is their envy, will never get it. You know, explain it to them a million times, they'll never get it. You know, explain to a hardened criminal, crime doesn't pay. And you can explain it 100 times, you can put him in prison 30 times, and still he'll think, no, crime pays. Because he's got that mentality, that pollution within his heart, that blackness within his heart, that why should I play by the rules when I could be rich if I break them? Why should I follow any rules made by other people? I'll enjoy directly. You know, even though he's heard that it's sinful, even though he knows that it's illegal, even though he's seen that it's punishable and punished, still he does it. Because of stubborn obstinacy and impious, the results of past impious activities. So we have our books to answer questions, we have so much. Finally, we try to make them fortunate. You're in Kali Yuga, you're a big scientist who won't even live 100 years. Mandasu, Manda Matayo, Manda Bhagya. So in this age we have something, only one good thing for you. Kalir Dosha Nite Rajan Asti Yekam Hanakuna. Kirtana Devi Krishna Srimukti Sanjapanakuna. Just hear this Mahamantra. Somehow or other, hear the mantra, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, hear Bhagavad Gita, associate with devotees, take a little prasada. It's not just by an intellectual process, because their intellects are imperfect. And their, again, their mentalities are infected by this causeless unwillingness to serve the personality. So let them hear. Hear the Hare Krishna mantra, hear the message of Krishna. Gradually, maybe something will happen for them.
By chance.
By chance.
By chance, yes. And if not, well, luckier people. Something else? Yes.
But even believers, they have a difficulty to accept the existence of God when they face something. Even believers have their doubts in God.
Even believers have their doubts.
When they face some excessive pain, traumas, difficulties.
When they face some pain or difficulty.
They say that, for example, if you want to teach your children, don't touch the hot tower. You are not going to allow them to really burn themselves fully, but just a little bit is enough. So they say, why go to limit to suffering? Because some are really traumatic experiences in material world. So
I'm having trouble hearing, but basically, if I get your argument, if there were God, bad things wouldn't happen to people.
Well, bad would happen, but just to teach, but not really accessible, you know.
Everybody, only learning experiences would happen.
Something like that.
Something like that. That's how you would like it, but that's not how it is. The universe is not designed according to your specifications. It's not just a high school or IIT, it's also a prison. You know, prisoners are saying, you know, they really did a bad job designing this prison. You know, bars, I mean, that's ridiculous. And iron beds, I mean, this is just, you know, this doesn't make us better human beings. Government doesn't know what it's doing. Right? They'd like a country club, maybe, you know, a golf course and a swimming pool, and that's the way to, you know, rehabilitate us. Young girls once a week, you know. I'm just kidding. Sorry, it's not made to be an amusement park. And the instructions are there if you want to know how to get out. Keys are here. Pick them up and take them. No, why should I take them? All right.
Seems like the effect is just opposite. That too much excessive punishment again brings you to disbelieve in God.
Too much capital punishment brings us to disbelieve in God?
Yeah.
I don't see the connection.
Too much excessive punishment.
Too much expensive punishment?
Excessive.
Excessive. Excessive, you call it excessive. And besides, if there weren't, then there wouldn't be justice. You know, so it's like whatever God does, you're going to badmouth it. If he has heavy punishment, then it's excessive, he's despotic, he's a tyrant. And if there's no punishment, then you say, what kind of world is this? You know, where people can, you know, some terrorist can shoot up a schoolroom and kill, you know, 50 kids and nothing happens to him. What do you think should have happened to him? I should, you know, burn in hell for him. Well, okay. You know, you can't have it both ways. According to Shastra, there are laws of karma enforced by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you act sinfully, you'll suffer. That's fair. That's fair. If you break the law, you will suffer. And not this guy suffers, but that guy gets away with it. It's consistent. It's everywhere. But you don't like it, that's all. Why? You know, the police are coming. So, you know, someone's like beating an old lady and trying to steal her purse, and the police come. Well, who's unhappy about that? Not the old lady. Last question.
But people have difficulty relating to their sufferings because the sufferings come for the sins committed in previous lives, so God will punish when the crime is committed, then people can relate and maybe that would help them to change.
People, if the punishment came boom, boom, boom right away, people could relate to it. I've addressed this question in my book, Vanity Karma, at some length. And yes, you could say if people were punished right away, then that would... But there's another side to material nature. Material nature is not just a prison and not just a school, but it's also a playground. A playground of illusion. For those living entities who want to enjoy independently, all right, enjoy independently. And you can go there and you can think, yes, I'm enjoying it. And I'll enjoy even more. And that effect is enhanced by the delay, the distance between misdeed and punishment. You think, I got away with it. And it's only later that you suffer like a dog, or as a dog. So Krishna's doing many things at once. He's instructing, he's punishing, he is giving you the illusion that you asked for. And whatever he does, the demons will they'll bark and bad. And the devotees, Tane Rishikesha Tavapurta, they'll say, yes, everything you do is right. And they'll glorify Krishna. And Nakshan Sipi Tane to show you what to do. Not the demons. Vishnu Bhakti Smita Deva Masuda Start Vipravya. Should we stop here?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.
Swami ki. Jai. Shri Prabhupada.